Are we ready, Julie? Okay. All right. Thank you. We'll go ahead and get started then. Appreciate you guys coming in this afternoon early. We're going to have a long meeting, so we'll try to get through this all in the hour. For those of you who are not in the Budget Advisory Committee, your folders are up on the dais there. And for those that are on the committee, I gave some updated information. We did a final forecast for this year for both revenues and expenses. Not much change in revenues. Looks like we're going to have a reduction in expenses that were initially forecast a month ago. So it changed some fund balances, so I did change that. There were no changes to what we're forecasting for next year's budget at this time. So I'm going to go ahead and get started. In your folders in the packet, there's some information on a welcome memo to go ahead and read. And then also the mission and vision of the city, which council has previously approved. And then also the city council goals, including the new goal that was added last year. And the importance of those is as we get into the next touch on the budget, which will be capital initiatives and personnel, is each of those items that's asked for an initiative does need to match at least one of those council goals. That's how we prioritize what we're bringing to council. Then we have the budget calendar so that you can be prepared for all of the upcoming meetings and then eventual hearings that we'll be having on the budget and release to the public. So I just want to give a reminder on what we're doing today. It's a 2023 baseline operating budget. What the baseline budget is taking the service levels that we currently offer and the staffing that we currently have, and that does include two sunset positions that are intended to expire at the end of this year. But we look at it taking exactly the 70 employees we have now and what's it going to cost next year to offer those same services with the same personnel and all of the current contractual requirements or obligations that we do have with a look at what the inflationary factor would be to offer all of that service level next year. So that's really what we're looking at today. As far as initiatives, any potential personnel requests or capital projects, we'll be coming back to you in September. So first, Councillor Wells, do you have a question? Currently, we have 70, 68 full-time and two part-time. Well, I saw the curious look on your face, like you had something you wanted to ask, but you weren't sure if you wanted to interrupt me. So I do appreciate, please ask questions as we go along if you do have questions. So first, what I want to get into is the assumptions that help build the revenue projection and then the baseline budget. So population, the official population as of April 1st of this year from the Office of Financial Management for the state of Washington is 13,640. And we use that number because that drives all of our per capita revenue that we receive. And then that also helps us project out how many new households or current households we have that helps project spending for retail sales tax, utility taxes that we may receive, and property tax as well. The estimate for next year, right now, we're looking at an estimated growth of 13.4%. Since 2018, our percent has been 13.6%, so right in that same, just a slight decrease for next year, with a population of around 15,471, a change of just over 1,800. That adds, using, again, the Office of Financial Management numbers of 2.98 persons per household, which is our 2022 average, that gives us 615 new households for a total households. Well, this year would be 5,760 and then an additional 615 next year. So that really, like I said, really helps us project our revenues out for the next year. Our housing unit increase, which I use in a lot of our models. Sorry, I thought you were. No, one slide five, please. Sorry about that. I will try to remember to say move ahead. So that is about 11.95% increase, and I use that in a lot of our models for projections. The next one is the inflationary factor, which the city has adopted as the inflationary factor for us. It's a West Region CPIU, and what that is it's a inflationary factor that's specific to the Western region and more of the Northwest, really, than any other area. For comparison, in the news, in June, this is the June CPIU, and in June, it was advertised as 9.1% nationwide. In the West here, it was 8.8%. Why that is important is because that's typically the change that we see for purchasing new supplies and things like that. But also, we use that as our index for impact fees and things of that nature, system development charges. The only one we don't use it for is the school impact fees. That's off of a different construction-related index that's specific to schools. Last year, I'm sorry, I don't have it was over 5%, I believe. The year before, it was at like 1.4. So the thing that I would like council to think about, we're going to come back later in November to bring the fee schedule to council, is 8.8%, that's what we would index both of our impact fees January 1st. System development charges have already increased 3 years in a row. We did not increase them in 2022. Right now, we would not increase them in 2023 because by our policies, after three straight index increases, we have to come back to council to reconsider that. Public Works is working on a new water plan, so as part of that, we'll be coming to you to look at what should we do with setting the system development charge fee that we do have. And then the question is, do we want to relook at the two impact fees? We've relooked at them recently, but the inflationary factor is pretty high. Is that something that council wants to look at? Do we want to just go ahead and increase that? Because we are seeing an increase in inflation matching that, but that also is something that will increase the cost of building a home and then gets usually passed on to the buyer as well. So it's something for you to think about. No decisions tonight. Think about it, and then as we get closer to November, you can filter information to Steve or to myself, and we can talk about that with the fee schedule. Park and traffic, correct. And I guess the last thing I'll say is why I bring it up is, could, you know, the increase along with other increases, could that slow down even more housing? And so then that affects our revenues. So there is, you know, kind of a bigger picture look at that. I know we have a policy of growth pays for growth, but again, it could affect other revenue sources that are more of our flexible revenue sources that pay for our ongoing expenses. So we've got some graphs in here for you to kind of look at through that. Just the same thing with the population growth that I just mentioned. Since 2010, 186% increase in population. So we, as we all know, have grown pretty significantly over the last 12 years. So if we go to slide 7, this is just the current facility expenses that we have by contractual agreements, both for the RAC, our public safety lease, which we're getting close to getting into tenant improvements and stuff like that. So whether or not we move in the end of this year or early next year, we're still working that out. Our Public Works Operations Center, this is for the bond payments for that. And then for the outdoor recreation complex, the bond payments for that. And the operating expenses, we're still just estimating a $75,000 amount because this is the first year that we've gone an entire year with renting out the facilities, because when we built it, we had a partial year, then we had a partial year and COVID hit, and then it shut down. So we've really seen, we'll have a better idea after the school district has seen all the revenues through the end of this year as to what will really be. I do anticipate it'll go down some, because our revenues have been better, but right now I don't have all the data for that.
$75,000 is including the rental
the rentals as far as what's paid for revenue for, yes. That would be what's left over after all the expenses and then any rental revenue for the fields and then our 60% share of what's left over, and then the school also pays 40%. So next to the revenue assumptions, and these are the ones that really drive what we're going to have available to handle operations and then some capital and initiatives as well. Property tax, I'm building in the 1% increase that we're allowed statutorily, and we'll talk about that in November. The total increase at 1% is $19,241 spread out over all of our taxpayers. So the increase really isn't a lot. The cumulative effect over time is something that makes a difference. But in 1 year, that's where we're at. Our total new construction, my estimate right now is $386 million. I have not gotten everything from the county yet. I expect to get that hopefully before we next have a touch on the budget. Why I have that amount is it's from typically the end of July to the next end of July, so August 1st to July 31st of each year before they start to prepare the levy for the next year. And we had quite a few single-family residential homes still going up at that time period last year. Plus, there was some commercial that was just starting that has really progressed on from there. So I do expect that we'll have, in comparison, we had over $300 million in new construction last year. So I'll have a better handle on that next time that we meet. Annexations are small, under 1,000. Total property tax, about a $300,000 increase because of the new construction. Sales and use tax, still forecasting a 60%, 40% split. That's where we ended up last year. Our first quarter this year was about 55, 56%, 45, 44% for construction in the first quarter, but that's typical in how we've seen things in the past few years. I'm expecting about a 12% increase over 2022 year end. Right now we're averaging about a 22, 23% increase over the same period in 2021. Total sales tax, a little over $5 million. Over $2 million of that will be related to one-time construction sales tax for this coming year. Utility tax, about a 13% increase. That's relative to what we just talked about with the new households. And then also for some items like gas, electricity, and water, there's also usage factored into that as well. The only utility that I know we're going to see a slight decrease is in our sewer. It's going to go down, I believe it's just about 1%. We'll see that here in just a few minutes. All of the others will be steady and or a slight increase. About $212,700 increase in utility tax related to the new households. Indirect allocations, I put this in just so that you can see. We do an indirect cost model. All of our support departments, admin, HR, finance, we allocate that out over all the different funds to show the support that they get. The biggest are public safety, which is paid for general funds, so that doesn't show in here. It's not a revenue source back to the general fund. We look at the three restricted funds paying back to the general fund for that. And community development is just under $615,000. They're the highest one that we support. And then water fund, $463,000, and stormwater fund, about $283,000. Each of those are a pretty significant increase, especially the stormwater, as we've been ramping up the work that's being done there, getting ready for the new permit requirements. There's a lot more support that goes into that. State shared revenues, about a 17% increase, partially due to the per capita with the increase in people here in Ridgeville, but also There's a little bit of an increase this year in the actual per capita amounts for the different state shared revenues. It's 503,000 total. It's only about 4% of the general and street fund revenue overall. The reason I point that out is because every legislative session, we're always concerned that they're going to sweep money from the local entities. So I just want to point out the fact that we're not overly dependent on that. We don't want to lose it, but we're, you know, it's not something that is going to be critical to us if they do something and we're not able to fight that off. So, and then again, we have some graphs on the different revenue structure, so you can kind of see where we're at. Retail sales tax is by far the biggest, and then property taxes and utility taxes are the next two. And then you also look at planning and licensing and permitting and stuff like that is a significant amount, but that is restricted for specific use. And then when we look at the construction and the assessed values and stuff, the majority of our increase is going to be because of construction related new construction, I should say. And then we do have appreciation, which is averaging, I believe it's 11.8% this year. Actually, it's 13.2% is the appreciation on the next slide, if you'll change to that, Julie. That's the average by going to the assessor's office and looking what they're looking at with a random sample of Ridgefield homes and businesses to see what the new assessed value will be next year. I am expecting our levy rate to go down again. We're at 72 cents, the lowest in the county right now, and expecting it to go down to about 66 cents per thousand, and will continue to be the lowest in the city, or in the county, excuse me. Yes.
Use your microphone, please, if people happen to be watching.
Right now, our total assessed valuation is about $2.6 billion, and what I'm forecasting for next year is about 3.4. And that'll be on the previous slide, so you can see that in a graph there.
Okay. I was just making a comment. I remember when we crossed the 1 billion mark.
That's longer ago than me. I can remember when we passed the, the 1 billion, but I don't remember the 1 million.
1 billion. I said 1 billion.
Or 1 billion, yes.
Yeah,
I do remember that.
Kirk, one question for you too. Mm-hmm. Could you touch really quick on how the levy rate works again, why it's going down?
So the assessed value of the homes, for every $1,000 of assessed value, each taxing district has a certain amount that they charge against that assessed value. So with us, we're at 72 cents. So for every $1,000 of assessed value for your home, the city gets 72 cents on that. And then there's the other taxing district. So for the total amount, which I believe we're at $9.21 for the entire city, for all the taxing districts, our share of that is 72 cents, where everything else is mainly to state schools, then it's to Richfield School District, then there's the fire district, the port, the library. I believe that's everything. So, well, I guess that's a good segue because the next slide actually has all of that. And that'll show kind of the breakdown of our, actually it was $9.27, so I'll correct myself there. But it shows all of the different levies and the levy amount. State and county is combined there as the highest taxing districts. But that's the breakdowns. The city's 7.8% of the total property tax levy. And then, like I mentioned earlier, we're the lowest in the county, and this just compares us to the rest of the cities within Clark County.
So every $1 million, it's 700.
So, and the next couple of slides, Julie, let's jump ahead to slide.
Do we have these slides in our binder by chance, or access to any of them?
Not in your binder, no. I can send them all to you.
Okay.
So, Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't get it uploaded in. We just finished it today, so.
Not a problem.
But I'll make sure you all get
that.
Thank you. So the next three slides are just graphical depictions of things I've mentioned on sales tax and utility tax. So I'm going to jump to number 17, water and stormwater rates. And we do have a model that we use each year to look at the operating cost and capital cost for each of those utilities, and then what our forecast is for usage in the case of water, and then households, things like that, new accounts. The model calls for a 3% increase each year for inflationary factors. One thing that council's always told us is to make sure that we're getting 100% cost recovery. In water, the last 2 years, we've done a 0% increase because the growth paid for the changes in the cost of operating the utility, so we were able to buy down the rate increases. The year before that, we did a 1.5% increase. So this year, we're looking at a 3% increase, but also with an additional caveat to kind of look at, not only pay for, the cost of running the utility, but also right now with water, there are some days that we do have some high usage, so we're trying to find also a way both between some different educational opportunities and some carrots for incentives to look at also the rates in the higher usage areas, specifically for the three billing periods in the summer where we have higher usage, to potentially in those higher rate categories to increase the rates just in those higher usage areas. So what we want to do is, rather than spend some time on it today, right now I've just got a 3% increase built in overall to water and stormwater. It's a level, it's always the same amount, so a 3% increase there. But with water specifically, come back sometime between now and October, so it could be one of the September meetings or early October, and talk more about, in a presentation, the water rates and the options. In your binders that you have, there's a memo with some different options that the utility department came up with, some input we got from the advisory committee last week, and then some other staff members' input that we've received. Just an idea of what we can talk about. So if you can kind of look at that and then come with ideas when we do that presentation. And then there's three samples of ways we can use the rate model to increase in the higher usage areas to help hopefully get people to conserve. That's really what we're trying to do, is that second piece of this is pay the cost, but also get some water conservation in there. So look at that. We're not suggesting that those three scenarios that are in your binders are what we would do. They're just examples of what could be done. So we'll come back to you at a later date. That's under the one that just says notes at the back of the binder. So
Mr. Johnson, you don't need any direction from us this evening, just more of a putting it on our radar for future meeting, conversation?
We talked about it more at the advisory committee, and we really talked about it a little bit more in depth, and we thought for tonight, since we only have an hour, if we talk about that, we may not get to other things. So we thought that really should be carved out into its own presentation and discussion and get direction at that time.
Perfect.
So so what we're forecasting right now for increases or the revenue in water and storm is just over $2.8 million in water and $1.3 million in storm. So, and here's, I mentioned earlier that sewer, we always include this since we transferred our sewer operations over to Clark Regional. Right now they're forecasting a 1.12% decrease for our monthly service. There is a potential that it could actually have a 1.5% increase. There is some new legislation that they're talking about in Olympia right now to add additional compliance requirements on them that would have a significant impact on cost. So at this point, they have not built that in yet because nothing has been legislated. So hopefully this will wait until next year and happen the year after. But there is a potential that they're going to have to make some changes there.
And that is coming from the Department of Ecology for increased fees.
Correct, yeah.
For increased what?
Fees.
Fees.
So the next assumptions in revenue is related to our development, and development has been a big driver on all of our revenue sources, both for just the development and community development department specifically, but also it drives a lot of our flexible funding sources, sales tax, utility tax, and things like that. So we have to look at that one pretty closely. This year we had estimated 500 single-family residential permits. The last 2 years we've been over 600. Next year we're estimating 400. Right now we're on track for the end of this year to be around 460, so we're not going to quite meet our forecast for this year. So what I'm looking at is a little bit lower of a revenue in comparison to the budget this year, but what we're going to see by year end forecast, a little bit higher next year. Total revenue for the building activities would be about $3 million. We are looking at seeing more land use coming in right now, so we expect that to continue. And then we do have some additional commercial that we see coming in over the end of this year, early next year, that will be probably helping out with that revenue source, and we'll get a little bit more information as we go along there. But we do expect it's really, we're back to that cycle of we went land use in 2018, then building, and land use slowed down. Now we're back to land use, and then we'll go to building again in the next few years. Probably 2024 we'd start.
Could you explain to me what you mean by land use?
Land use is when it comes in for the permitting department, you know, the planning department, really to look at, does it meet code? What can they do on the zoning and things like that? So that'd be environmental review, hearings examiner, all of that kind of stuff.
Okay.
So and then again, we got some graphs on permits. As you can see, our overall permits are significantly down this year in comparison to the last 2 years, but really on par with what's normal in the past if you're looking at 2018 and 2019. So now we get to the assumptions for expense, wages, and benefits, which is the biggest cost for operating in the city and all of our funds. The first thing that we do is we do an FTE analysis, and what that means is for those employees that work across multiple funds, mainly that's our public works people, we do an analysis of where they actually work so that we can make sure we're getting their wages paid by the proper fund. And the main purpose of that is making sure that restricted funding sources are paying for their fair share of what the labor costs are. So we look at that typically in an 18-month window, January of 2021 to June of 2022 this year. And then when we look at that, I work with the supervisors and the public works director, and we kind of look at that and what's their plans and their needs for parks, streets, water, storm, cemetery, and then events and things like that. And then we kind of break out where they're going to be so that we can make sure we're getting them and the work's getting done and budget them accordingly there. Right now our personnel expense is trending to about a 10% increase over 2022 year end. And then healthcare increase right now, we're estimating 10%. We don't typically get all of the information on healthcare till the end of the year, so it's usually after we've already finished budget. The only thing that we've received so far is that with our non-represented employees that have their health care paid with the same as the Teamsters, it's going up pretty significantly. And so HR is going to look at some different options and see what we can do to buy that down a little bit. In the past, I would say, 6-7 years, we have never gone over an overall 7.5% increase in health care benefits. In many years, we are close to zero. So we do expect that hopefully when it's all said and done, we're still going to be under that 10% overall. Contributions for pensions, both PERS and LEF, that's for police and then all other employees, no change from what the state charges right now. The two that we are seeing some increases are wellness and employee relations. Wellness is helping with the, you know, keeping people active and working towards, you know, being both mentally, I guess I already said mentally and physically active and happy in their work environment. We've increased that from $325 per employee because of the cost of the programs that we're doing up to $500 per employee. And for intern and seasonal employees, doing half of that because typically they're here for 6 months at a time. So that would increase to $37,000 overall for the entire program. And then employee relations, that's the things like the picnic, Christmas lunch, and things like that, going from $275 per employee to $400 per employee, again, for all 70, and then half of that for seasonal and intern, and that's about $29,600.
Kurt, I have a question on the wellness. What do the employees use the money for for their well-being?
I'll have Lee answer the wellness.
We actually have a pretty comprehensive wellness program. A lot of it is activity-driven, some of which is online, some of which is in person. There are a number of educational resources, whether that's video, webinar, or live. We have a number of physical fitness activities that we provide, whether that's a walking challenge, or today there was MK Elevate offered a boot camp in the park. We also have a mental health component, which I think is incredibly important right now. So we're really trying to create a more robust opportunity for resources individually and education for employees right now. We have a financial wellness component, which actually is a free that we obtained a grant for. That's an online resource that includes financial counseling and education and assessments. We have access to registered dietitians for nutrition counseling. We also, one of our most popular, we provide wellness snacks a couple times a month. To help people learn how to eat in a healthy way. We have a lot of contests that we do, whether that's competing individually or just engaging in some kind of community service, fitness activity, wellness activity to gain points, and we provide incentives and prizes for engaging in those activities. So pretty robust program, very well appreciated, and I think it really does have a positive impact on mental and physical health and the working environment.
Thank you.
And we do have a very high level of participation as compared to other private and public entities.
I trust you on that. However, is that a normal jump if you double the cost?
We've looked at that every year, and we kind of look at what we've spent, and then also with the inflationary factor as well, we're kind of factoring that in as well. I think the big change has been the healthy snacks. That's been the one that employees have really asked for, and there's been an increase, obviously, in food costs and things like that. So we review it, and then we really kind of compare that to what we've done in the past and try to do an escalation on that. We have not increased the amount in 2 years.
Okay.
Also, just one other comment. I think that our city employees really appreciate it. I think it adds to a positive working environment, and that is a really important part of trying to retain qualified and employees that we might otherwise lose in the environment right now. So in my mind, it's a pretty low-cost way to keep employees happy and productive and motivated and employed with Ridgeville.
Thank you. So the next one on this slide was staff retirements. We do a model also of when people are eligible to retire. We do have two employees that could potentially retire next year. We don't know yet if they're going to, but we want to put it into the budget to be prepared for that. That total leave payouts on that would be about $49,600. And that would be one in water, one in storm. So the next slide just shows the difference from 2020 up through the budget of 2023 for personnel changes. And that includes the additional positions that council has approved over the last few years as well. And if you look on the bottom right hand, it's, like I mentioned, just at 10.03% increase from this year to the estimate of 2022 year end. It's a pretty significant increase if you look at 2022 year end. That's because we added so many employees. Council approved, I believe it was 8 positions for 2022, and that's the big difference there. So total dollar amount is about $871,000 in increase, and that's looking at both the labor contracts and policy for COLAs and step increases. And then just for you to look at later are some slides on the FTE allocations, where they're working. Right now there's no difference between 2022 and 2023 because at this point we made adjustments as we looked at that FTE analysis for the rest of this year. And we anticipate them staying the same next year. And if there's any personnel increases, we will be changing that chart as we meet the next time. Increase total was 10 FTE from 21 to 22. So actually I mentioned 8, but it was a total of 10 and 8 the year before. And then just a couple more slides there. Let's jump to slide 26. This is the one that we talk about every year with our FTE count per 1,000 in population. In 2010, we were at 6.02 employees per 1,000. In 2022, as we stand today, we're at 5.08. So we've really been pretty steady in keeping that in that range. And as you can see, even though we've added so many employees over the last 2 years, we're still decreasing in the amount of employees per 1,000. So now to assumptions for non-personnel. We do a three-year trend, so we look at the last 2 years of actual expense in every line item, and then we look at the forecast for the end of this year, and then we do a trend on that, and then we compare it to what the budget was, and then we look at it and do a inflationary factor. The inflationary factor that we're using is 5%. I know that's different than the 8.8 I mentioned earlier. The reason for that is most of the national economists expect inflation next year to be down more around the 5% range. So we used what we're seeing out in the marketplace and what the economists are forecasting for next year. Typically in the past, we've always used a 3% inflationary factor. General fund transfer, this is for street operations. This is just for the labor and the work they do to keep the streets up, potholes, street sweeping, you know, cleaning in the medians and all that kind of stuff. $721,000 transfer from general fund, which is the main funding mechanism for getting our street operations done. It's still a 2% decrease at this point from 2022. And then our pavement preservation program, which is the program we've talked about, and we have the 0.2% sales tax to fund that. That's for doing the slurry seals, the chip seals, and the maintenance to keep our roads at the 80 PCI that we've talked about in the past. And our plan is $600,000 per year, and that's what we've got in there in the baseline budget. Any additions to that would come as an initiative to you at a later date, but that's the normal, so that as we talked about, we would touch all the streets within the city in the 10-year period.
So where does the new funding mechanism for streets come in relation to this?
Well, that's a payment preservation program. That's just the expense portion of it. We'll talk about the revenue portion a little bit later. That's seeing the same increase that I mentioned for retail sales tax because it's increasing at that same percentage. So I'll show you that here in a little bit. But here it's just talking about what it's going to fund for the work and whatever slurry seals are on the plan and that type of work next year.
Do we anticipate the general fund transfer for street operations to go down over time as we do more proactive pavement preservation?
I doubt that it's going to go down because it's also paying for the labor that's in there. That's the main expense that it's paying. As we grow and our motor vehicle fuel tax increases and the dedicated utility taxes that we get, that could cause it to go down. And that's part of the reason for the 2% decrease this year. But the pavement preservation, it'll maintain the streets themselves, but you still have to do, you know, if there's, it'll eliminate probably potholes, but you're still weeding the medians, you're still doing the street sweeping, you're still cleaning up the sidewalks and trimming trees and doing all that kind of stuff. And the big one that we've seen the last 2 years is the snow events. Okay. So that's the one that's really added. I mean, we're probably an extra 75,000 at least this year. And then you had that wind event, combination snow event, that we had a ton of work both in streets and parks to do cleanup there.
Thank you. Appreciate the clarification.
So the final piece, all of it's equipment replacement fund. This just shows the amount of participation each of the operating funds will put in to replace our fleet and our heavy equipment. And right now the model calls for replacement of about 345,000 worth of equipment and vehicles. And we'll actually come to you in September with a list of what that is. But we just want to put it into the baseline budget because it's part of a model, it's part of a plan that we do every year. And it's all, most of that is already prepaid. So the next few slides, these are ones to kind of compare where we're at today and forecasting through the end of this year, and then what we're expecting for next year. This is showing for each of the operating funds, revenues and expenses and their comparisons. Total baseline revenue just for general fund operations is about $11.8 million. And that's a 13.8% increase from the amended budget this year at this point, and a 6.5% increase from what we're estimating for the year end. Expense down about 10.5% from the amended budget. The main reason it's down is because we had put some money in to transfer some of those ARPA funds over for some capital projects that won't occur this year. So that's not going to get transferred. So that is down. The increase, though, for operations, most of it in relation is for labor increases for the new employees and things like that. And then the kind of programs I would have to say that council has approved, which is striping and the tree maintenance and things like that, a 24% increase overall. Total baseline expense, about $10 million. We're looking at a net total, so a surplus right now of about $1.5 million. And then the available funds as we get into the initiative process, a little over $1 million for ongoing type expenses, and just about $7.2 million for one time, of which $2.4 million is ARPA-related, that council said that they most likely will want to put into a capital project. So community development, revenue down about 10% from the amended budget, up about 16%, though, from the year-end estimate. Year-end estimate is quite a bit lower than what we thought earlier, about $3 million total revenue. Expense up 2.6% from the amended budget and up about 11% from the year-end estimate. About $3.3 million, and that includes that $614,000 indirect costs. So there actually will be a net decrease of about 307,000. And this is why during those high years where you get a lot of permits in, it's good to put that money away in the reserves, because this is a fund that will see both highs and lows. And so this helps us weather the downturn, so to speak, where it's not quite as busy. And then we can keep operations the same so that we're in good shape as everything gets busy again. We still have about $2.3 million in reserves available in that fund. Street fund, this, again, is mainly paid for with general fund money, about $1.2 million in revenue, a 1.4% increase from the amended budget, and about a 3.8% increase from year-end revenue. Expense, a 0.3% increase from amended, and a 24% increase from the forecast for the end of the year. We did have a few things that we added at the amendment. The flashing signals up near the school that were quite a bit less than what we had forecast initially, and then a couple of other projects that are coming in under budget. Some of the only things this year that have come in under budget, but the street fund is that's been very helpful for that, and about $1.2 million in expense on that one. Water fund, about 9.8% increase from amended budget, and just about 15% from estimated year end. Because of the early rains, our usage hasn't been quite as high. It's been down about 5% through the June billings, which is a good thing. $3.1 million in total revenue. Expense up about 5.6% for amended, and almost 14 for the estimate from the year end. 2.5 million, so we'll see a surplus there of about 594,000, of which is good for ongoing expenses, and still about 1.7 million for one time for repair and replacement. So the next slide, 32, this is just some of the stuff that I mentioned earlier about options for water conservation, rates, and education. Again, this slide's just in here to show you what is available, and then we'll talk about that at a later date. So stormwater fund revenue is about 15% higher than amended budget. 21% from year-end estimated. It's been down a little bit this year from what we initially forecast because some of the commercial didn't come on as quickly as we thought it would, but still $1.3 million next year in revenue. Expense, about 6.4% for the amended budget, and 20.4% from the baseline, $1.2 million in total expense, and a net surplus of about 89,000, but we will see a pretty significant increase in reserve requirements for the storm fund, even though we made those changes. So it's a good thing we made those changes in policy, or we would be negative in here for what we could do without dipping into those reserves. Right now it's only showing about 29,600 available for any type of initiatives, whether it's ongoing or one time. But council does have some options with the reserves that we talked about earlier when we redid the financial policies. So, and then here's the estimated policy reserve balances. Overall, about a 7% increase. And storm fund, like I mentioned, that's a higher one, about 13% increase. And most of the others are right around the same amount. And that's taken into account the expectations for revenue and expense next year. And then we've got some of our slides on the fund balance and policy reserves in comparison. This one's just for general fund. We do expect to see an increase up to about $14 million in that fund. That includes both general and the community development stuff. But that's a pretty significant increase from 2015, where we were at a total of about $2.3 million. So overall for the operating budget, and this includes, again, both general and community development, revenue of about $14.78 million. with expenses of about $13.3 million, so about a $1.5 million surplus there that we can use for other uses. And then we have a breakdown of the expense by the different departments in general fund for you to look at. And again, I'll send this out to you. And fund balance, total fund balance, again, about $14.2 million. After we take out reserves and calculate what's restricted for building activities, about $8.2 million overall between one-time and ongoing type expenses if you choose to use it. And then again, some more graphs on revenue expense and net income to kind of just show that in a picture. And then our, again, our steady growth in fund balance. 5 minutes. Okay. So street fund, I've already mentioned the dollar amounts on that. Again, revenue and expense pretty closely match. And water, again, $3.1 million with a $2.5 million expense with a surplus there. And overall, about $2.3 million available for use. And then finally, our stormwater, about $1.3 million in revenue and $1.2 million in expense. And again, a very small amount of remaining reserves. But as you can see, our policy reserves have pretty significantly increased if you compare it from 2020 to 2023. That just shows the amount of activity that that fund requires now. So our smaller funds, drug, affordable housing, both of those have no expense expected at this point. Small amounts, I mentioned earlier at a previous council meeting, affordable housing, we're capped at how much we get per year. We'll come back to you early next year to get ideas on how to use that. The transportation benefit district, this is what you had mentioned, Councillor, on the revenue part of what we're getting for the 0.2% tax. And we're expecting about $900,000 receipt for that 0.2% sales tax. Right now, $600,000 in expense, which is what the model calls for, and an additional $773,000 available for use. And debt service fund, that's just cash in, cash out to pay our debt service on the general side. So the other ones on slide 46, these ones, I don't have a very good revenue projection yet and fund balance projection at all because we're still working through what we're going to complete, what percentage of completion on the capital projects by the end of this year. And we're still looking at trying to calculate out the amount of transportation impact fee credits from commercial for next year and then what would be paid for with credits versus what will be paid for in cash. Right now, the revenue, real estate excise tax is looking good, and water system development charges is looking good. The system development charges are down in revenue, but our fund balance is good for all the water projects coming up. The two impact fee funds, we are going to be very low on available fund balance, if any. We're just seeing right now about an 80% payment in credits on both of those versus cash. So, but again, as I mentioned earlier, we're getting a lot of projects done early and we're getting a pretty good return on our investment for those credits for the parkland, built-in parks, streets and things like that that would not have gotten done otherwise. So next steps, I'll just go through September. We have a budget advisory committee meeting on September 8th at 2 p.m. We'll do the updated revenue forecast then. We'll go over personnel initiatives and capital project requests, and then we'll present the proposed budget with those initiatives built in, and then what we'll do is that above the line, below the line that we do each year, and then we'll go to council and do a work session on 9/22. Right now it's scheduled at 5:30. I'll talk with Mr. Stewart whether or not that needs to be earlier because I do believe we're going to have a lot of conversation around that. So any questions, anything that you would like me to bring back for the next meeting?
I don't think we have any additional questions at this time. Very thorough, as always. Thank you so much.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Okay, Council, seeing that it is 6:27 for Council and the general public that is here for our meeting, I will give us, is 6:35 okay to start the Council meeting? Will that work? Okay. So we will be starting the City Council meeting at 6:35.